Hello and welcome back to the Dynasty Crossroads. Tonight I'm going to be doing a profile of Taj Washington, a wide receiver coming from USC into the NFL draft in 2024, and also talking a bit more expansively about my ranks and the tiers in which I put players in.
Do you have the time to listen to me grind? Take down the few watchers and nerds all at once. I'm one of those skeptical of status quo. Lazy and to the bone, no doubt about it. Sometimes I grind my Excel sheets. Sometimes pour cold water on heat. When the math's not adding up, you bet I'm checking out.
It can be a little frustrating sometimes to be asked who your sleeper is. Not that I don't want to get the question or I mind answering it. It's just a difficult question to answer these days. For one thing, there are no sleepers. Almost every player and players that aren't even going to be relevant ever in the NFL get talked to death, analyzed to death by people with higher IQs and much more experience and knowledge than me. So who could possibly be a sleeper? Almost everyone has a fantasy diet, at least in the main community. That means if there's something they don't know about a player, it's because they're deliberately trying not to learn it, or because they misunderstood it, or maybe because they were sick that day. We're all listening to a lot of podcasts, reading a lot of content, and the number of great analysts out there make it, frankly, implausible to suspect anyone in most of my leagues doesn't know about a decent prospect, let alone a good prospect, in any particular rookie class. But also we know increasingly that that community I'm describing isn't entirely made up of people that fit that description. There are plenty of people who are very capable, very good fantasy players that don't necessarily know every player's name unless they were drafted. And so there is a window for potential sleepers, and there is a window for players that should be known that aren't known. It's not that it's an unfair question, it's that my answer to it can never be exact. For example, when I tier players in my rankings, the first tier of player wide receivers, are essentially players I expect great draft capital and I expect good things. They beat the average, they beat the age curves. These players should be really good for fantasy in the NFL. I try to be as restrictive as possible when I'm putting players in the first tier because of that. I want my tiers to be more intra-class than class-relevant. And that wasn't always the case. And so going back through my history of ranks, I see some clunker moments because I was tiering by class rather than tiering in through different classes, as it were, but I've tried to make that a feature of my ranks. But most tier 1 prospects I expect to be good. They should be first round rookie draft picks, they should be highly drafted in the NFL. I think they did everything a great player would have done in college. Second tier players tend to be players that meet almost that description, but for one reason or another they're not quite as eye-catching. They don't quite tick all the boxes is one way of saying it, but it's not like there's a certain number of boxes. For example, last year I put Jordan Addison in my second tier, not because I didn't think he was great. Anyone listening to my podcast or paying attention to the Dynasty Grind or in my Discord knew I was a huge fan and am still a huge fan of Jordan Addison and what he did in college. But he didn't quite hit the highlights in terms of max creation on a receiving yards per team pass attempt basis in a single year. He didn't obliterate the age curve. He doesn't look exactly like the best prospects for one small tiny reason or another, but the sum is far greater than the parts, and the parts are still all really good. There's very few questions there. In the second tier this year, in the first tier this year, I just have Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Nabers. It's already a really heavy class for me to put two players in that I don't have questions here, and I'm willing to go to the matches other than them being a top 3, 4, 5, maybe pick, depending on how many quarterbacks there are, in a super flex draft. In my second tier this year, I have 3 players. That's also meant to be a relatively high number. So when Zach Reed from the Dynasty Dummies or someone else says this is a heavy class or this is a deep class, that's kind of how I understand what they mean. There's a great number of prospects that are easily early or even late first round prospects that I'm very confident in have that kind of chance to make it in the NFL for fantasy. context and taking into account other people's rankings and interpretation and analysis notwithstanding, that's roughly what I've seen on my profile, and that's what I mean when I say this is a deep class. What this makes this class particularly interesting, one of the more interesting recent memory, is that the third tier is also meant to be a relatively restrictive tier, but it's where I put players I think are much greater than the sum of their parts. Not just they have good parts, and I think they're even better than that, but I think there's a lot more to their profile, or potentially a lot more upside to their profile, because of one strong comparison or another to other players who've gone on to do that. This year, I have four players in that tier. This would be a good sleeper tier, as it were, but it's not really, because I don't expect them to be unknown, and they're nowhere near Jordan Addison level prospects overall. I just think there might be something between the lines, as it were, that make them have a lot more upside than their current college production can show us. So this year I've got Dontez Walker, or Tez Walker, who's one of those outside-the-numbers guys, high ADOT players with a low slot rate that I'm actually really interested in because of his path in college and the amount of volume I have to actually analyze, or the number of routes, if you will. I'm not sure I have a complete and full picture. His ceiling profile is Marvin Harrison Jr., as it were, whereas his most common profile is someone like, in this year's class, a Jalen McMillan or a Jalen Polk or a Keon Coleman, or even from last year, a Cedric Tillman. Fairly disappointing, relatively rarely fantasy relevant, but when they are, they can have a big impact in a single week. Most of those prospects don't go on to do much, if anything, and the ones who do go on to do things don't do a lot of it. Again, inconsistent flex starts at best. But again, that ceiling of Marvin Harrison Jr., or to a greater extent, a CeeDee Lamb, or no, he's not really a high ADOT player either. A Ja'Marr Chase would be the antithesis recently of that level of prospect, is really interesting. And because he only really played one full year and his best year was cut in half, there could be a lot more to that profile. He could be a lot more Ja'Marr Chase than he is Cedric Tillman, but I don't know it. And the volume we have to analyze, yeah, it was angling towards the higher end of that tier. Now, because it's a small sample, it most likely is the lower end of that tier. But I want to hear what other people have to say, and I'm keeping him in this interesting tier because I think there might be a lot more to the profile here, and I want to keep a higher value on him than his overall numbers necessarily suggest. The same is true with Troy Franklin and Ja'Marr Chase, or Ja'Marri Chase. Neither have the mystery that Dez Walker have, but they are high ADOT players outside the number that I know are not Ja'Marr Chase level prospects, partly because of where they played, but overall because of their complete college profile. However, they are above average in that tier, which means they are more likely than not, even for that level of player, to actually have some level of fantasy impact if they get decent draft capital, if nothing else, to confirm that potential. Ladd McConkey is the other guy in this tier. He's in this tier for a very different reason. He's a low ADOT, low slot player, but I think I can see a very capable player in that role. Just has a limited fantasy upside for those who don't show a great potential or a great capacity or a great history of earning really significant volume. For those low ADOT players, low slot players, I kind of like to see that volume always, but also at some point them to have played outside the numbers and shown some success. Because most players that are succeeding in the NFL level with a high slot role or through the middle of the field, if you like, can also split out wide, do have some bite to their profile, if you will, and they can play in another role. And most prospects I've seen hit with that level of profile, or a Ladd McConkey's level of ADOT or slot rate, have some history, like in their first year, their second year, they switched to a lower slot rate, or they had a higher ADOT once, and still showed some potential in that role, though that wasn't the bulk of their profile. And Ladd doesn't really have that. He was consistently used in the same role, consistently the wide receiver 1, 2, or 3, despite the depth chart not changing a lot around him. It wasn't just Brock Bowers on the offense. He doesn't seem to be beating out other players for volume. Now, on a per-touch basis and a per-route basis, he's performing excellently. Even on a QB-targeted rating, he's not so bad year to year. He's clearly helping his offense, and he's clearly helping his quarterback. But he's not co-opting volume. Now, there is some precedence for players going on to earn volume in college when they didn't in the NFL. But relatively few have gone on to do it with significant college history. Michael Thomas and Terry McLaurin, about the only two I can think of, and they are both from the same offense, and it seems to be a part of the coaching and the scheme that that team in Ohio happened to be going for around that time, and it's since stopped. So I don't know I can bet a lot on a profile like Lag McConkey, but I do think he's a capable player that the NFL might have some interest in, and I definitely don't want to have a below average or an insulting rank on a very capable player who should garner some interest, get a role, and from what I can tell, be fairly effective on it on an NFL level. I don't want to disrespect that, because how many players do I think are going to be fantasy relevant from a draft class? I think at the wide receiver position, we're likely to get two, really. We normally get six that have some level of fantasy impact or fantasy seasons inside the top 24 or multiple top 24 seasons, but that's a very rich class in terms of results, and most of those aren't the nuggets of an individual draft class, even when it's 2014. You only really get two or three of those pure nuggets, even in the heaviest of heavy classes. And so by the time I get to my third tier, I'm looking for interesting players, but I'm also ranking players I think are capable without that real shiny potential at the NFL level for fantasy. And Lad McConkey kind of fits that role. That slot in my ranks. I think he's going to be useful. I think he should garner attention. I think he should be interesting to fantasy. I don't have high hopes for what the ultimate ceiling or utility of him is in fantasy, but he's certainly head and shoulders above most average prospects in that regard. And so third tier he goes. My fourth tier might be a better sleeper tier, because these are players all with warts. Normally, or most commonly, I don't know the NFL is even going to pay attention. And so I want to see the draft. I want to see where they land. I want to see if they get drafted in the fourth round or they're undrafted. I will chase lower drafted prospects, but that's going to give me more information about some of the warts on their profile. And if it doesn't add up, I might start to fall on how likely I am to roster them, or increase on how likely I am to roster them. Now, to me, that doesn't fit the definition of sleeper. A sleeper should be someone you're really excited about that everyone else isn't, quote-unquote, everyone else. And so while this might be the better sleeper tier that I've come to in my ranks so far, it's not really. It's not the player I want to bang the table over. It's a player that if they do well in the NFL, I'm going to go, look at that. I saw something interesting on his profile, not quite enough, and he's gone on to do well. I will put him in the bucket of players I might be able to learn more from and be grateful in the few places that I snagged him in very late in the rookie draft, maybe. This year, it's Ricky Parcell, I'm not sure how I say that name, Jacob Cowing, and Malachi Corley, both of whom were getting a lot more pre-draft attention than I thought they would from the fantasy community, so maybe my lower expectations on their draft capital are a little underrated. And then there's Brendan Rice. He's not just a draft capital concern, although we always have that concern a little bit. I could see him fitting in the third, fourth, fifth rounds, and the NFL being pretty happy with that on a heritage basis alone. His profile had a lot more production warts on it than the other three in this tier, but there was a solid player here, and he has that pedigree, and the NFL might be a little bit more interesting, and to me that all balanced out to him being in the fourth tier of my ranks. Below this point are players with obvious glaring differences and problems on their profiles, problems in terms of comparing them to positive outcomes from past historical prospects, although we do know there's always players that hit with when we don't expect or don't have the perfect college profile, and so there is still a tiering effect to them. This year, my fifth tier are mostly high ADOT players, which this year's draft, not only is it deep, and deep in just total prospects, it's really deep in outside the numbers high ADOT players. And I don't really chase that profile unless there's some mystery to it, like a Tez Walker, and the upside that was put on tape, or put on numbers if you like, was really significant, and maybe we could have seen that sustained, like a Tez Walker, or they got the sample, like Franklin and Thrash, and Thrash, the averages and what most players do in those roles. There's still relatively little consistency in terms of fantasy outcomes coming from that role from college. They hit at a lower rate. But the NFL really does like drafting that type of player as well. And this year, there are a lot of players that fit that profile that aren't thrashing the thresholds, but are capable or interesting. And I'm mostly less interested in them because of the typical average fantasy results. It's not really a nag on their production profile, just that they did what a lot of players with that higher role did with that production profile or with that role in college. And I think people get overly excited about the highlights or the what ifs they did that, but more often in the NFL. I can't really see a tendency or a need that there could be more upside to their volume or their capability, but what they did do in that role was good. They're really good college players and they're deserving of attention, like Ladd McConkey, but their role is a little less consistently hitting or viable for fantasy in terms of rookie draft selections in the NFL. So this year, it's, you know the names, it's Jalen McMillan, it's Jalen Polk, it's Keon Coleman, Joseph Cephas, who's slightly different than that role and what I just described, and Adonai Mitchell. All these players have various different combine narratives going around them and who's built like a Greek god and who's too small and who's too skinny. But all of them perform relatively well on that role, but not impressively well in terms of my profile of their production, like a Thrash or a Franklin. And they will get more draft capital than this tiering and this rank suggests, probably because the NFL does like to take shots on that type of role. So I don't want to ignore them. They belong in a top tier outside of my most interesting fantasy tiers. But I'm still not enamored. I'm probably never going to go into the truth of train. Although, could I take shots on them very late in rookie draft, just looking for some viability and value upswings? Yes. And we'll see what the draft brings as always. This week, I want to talk about someone coming from my 6th ranked tier, mainly because Zach Reed from the Dynasty Dummies asked me to take a look at him, but also partly because he's been sitting in a hold rank since I noticed his profile, and I never really investigated it as much as I wanted to. I just time out eventually, especially lately. I noted him as someone that was interesting, stuffed him into my 6th tier just based on some preliminary observations, and never went back to make more notes. And he's one of the few players in this year's class that I don't have notes on. And I was like, this is an excuse to do it. And I could finally make another Crossroads episode and include that. Now, my 6th rank, my 6th tier, it's a little less consistent what I'm looking for to put in my tiers outside the top 3, you might notice, because each class is slightly different. But in this 6th tier, I've got players with marked and very notable production problems, or they don't stand out in their production profiles, but they seem to have some above-average marks. Like Taj Washington, I want to reinvestigate. This year, I've got Taj Washington, Xavier Leggett, Malik Washington, and Javon Baker, who have been asked about a lot lately, all have something that's really interesting, and they seem to have done well in college in different spots of certain years, but don't overly impress with those roles. And then you've got a mixture of, are they in the more or less likely to be successful in terms of fantasy kind of buckets being thrown all together in here. Most of these guys are higher ADOT players. Xavier Leggett is a lower ADOT player. But because of the nature of this class, most of these guys are running a slightly higher ADOT. My 7th ranked or beyond, if I ever have that, and this year I've got 3 players there. Again, players that seem to be best described as, I'm sure their college teams were happy to have them. I see relatively little fantasy upside from all aspects of my profiling, but they might get draft capital, so I should probably put some notes in and include them in my ranks. Anywhere below 5 is usually that, but this year being a bit of a deeper class, my 6th ranked tier, while I have relatively little interest, sleeper again doesn't really fit. I also think they deserved more looking at than most of the rest of decent college players that are going to get some level of interest. There's something there, like a Javon Baker or a Taj Washington. So let's start from the beginning by starting at the end, because that's kind of how my process starts. I just take a look at the rough numbers on the top. What made me notice to that I wanted to make more notes on Taj Washington to begin with is I just flicked over to a tab I have that pulls in various different metrics I use in my model off the top just to see what he was. What are the top sheet numbers? And with Taj Washington, he's got a 47% slot rate, for his career, and at ADOT slightly over 10, just below 11. So between 10 and 11, which is the same thing said twice, Pete. So that tells me something about the type of player he is. In my evaluations from college, that's a lower slot rate. 47% isn't particularly low, but it's less than someone who is a quote-unquote slot player. So is Ladd McConkey, by the way. And a 10 ADOT is also particularly low. And so to put it in words, as I do have, because sometimes I just want to see the words, I don't want to read numbers, it's low ADOT, low slot. And my sheet converts that for me into simply that description at the front. He's a low ADOT, low slot player. So that tells me something. Now, I'm going to do more on this later because someone asked me to re-go over this content. I use it in my evaluations and my notes and all my rookie profiles and the podcast here and last year on YouTube, but I just haven't had the time or energy to edit to do that this year. But I use a simple, when I'm looking at those buckets, I have expectations, but I'm always trying to be flexible because no player is any other player, and buckets are limiting rather than expansive. So they're not helping us expand our potential pool. It's trying to pull out as many players as it can to limit our options, but to create the most likely pool that fit this player. And there's always going to be mistakes. Buckets are always mistakes, but meant to be, you know, educated mistakes. So high ADOT, high slot players, high ADOT, low slot players are drafted in the first three rounds of the NFL draft, or rather 34% of players drafted in the NFL draft in the first three rounds at wide receiver tend to be high ADOT, low slot players. They hit in the NFL at about the same rate. So that doesn't mean every player that gets selected with this profile succeeds. It just means about a third of them have at least one top 24 season or maybe one top 36 season and have some fantasy viability. High ADOT and high slot players, a much rarer group we've been talking about a lot more lately because Zay Flowers was drafted after Darnell Mooney and before that DJ Chark, relatively few. Only about 5% of picks in the first three rounds are players that fit this bucket. And I have tried to make my buckets accurately enough to represent the pool. So it is kind of eye-opening that the NFL isn't throwing draft capital very often, even just in the first three rounds, at players with high ADOTs and are being used in the slot a little bit. That's a weird role and it doesn't really exist in the NFL as far as I can see, even though the buckets of who is a high and who is low ADOT and slot do change. However, so far, all three of those players, you'll notice, have had at least a top 36 season and had some interest in viability in fantasy. Now, since it's only three players and 5% of all draft picks since, you know, 2000 whenever, that's not particularly impressive. It's a low sample percentage. But it is a bucket I want to keep my eye on since players do seem to be getting drafted from that group a little bit more often, and Zay Flowers' results last year encourage us to keep considering it, even though we don't really know what a fair representation of the hit rate might be. But so far, when the NFL has taken shots there, they do mean to give them routes, and all three of them have done something at some point to be of significance in fantasy, even if for DJ Chark it was fairly late and barely relevant. Low ADOT, high slot players? Low ADOT and low slot players. About 39% of prospects in the first three rounds fit this bucket, and 51% of them have some level of viability. So if you're looking for a pure hit rate group, low ADOT, low slot players, like Ladd McConkey, and this is why he kind of entered that tier for me, are the most likely to have some level of impact in fantasy. Again, we're not talking CD Lamb, although he is in this bucket. We're talking Michael Gallup. We're talking Nelson Agholor and Devin Funchess and Jamison Crowder, all of whom, and even Alan Lazard, have had at least a top 36 season or 600 to 700 yards and have made starts in many fantasy leagues if they're 12 teams deep at least with three wide receivers starting. A lot of great players come in this group as well. It's not a limiting group by any means. Michael Pittman, CeeDee Lamb, DJ Moore, Rashee Rice, Garrett Wilson, Devontae Smith, all technically fit this group. Less than 60% of slot rate, and yet a lower ADOT below 13. And I know that doesn't accurately describe necessarily how they play in the NFL or what you think of them. Saying that Devontae Smith is a lower ADOT, lower slot player doesn't really fit. But throughout his college career, if you average his slot usage and average his ADOT, it was below 13, and it was below 60%, which is around about where the averages are for the pool of players going into the NFL. So it doesn't really describe his game, but it does put him in a comparable group to what different players did throughout their college career. Deebo Samuel's also in that group, just to show you that it can be a wild group for how they actually play on the field. Low A-dot and high slot usage. So they're in the slot 60 to 100% of the time, and they have an A-dot below 13. Only 20% of draft picks have been made from this group. So it's actually slightly less drafted. High A-dot and low slot group, that was 34%. That with Chris Olave and George Pickens and Puka Nacua and Marquise Brown, DK Metcalf. The real outside the number alpha group, if you like. It's drafted a lot less, but it hits slightly more often. And there's enough players being drafted in this group, and like the high A-dot, high slot group, which was only 5% of prospects being drafted, but 100% hit rate. This is only 20% of prospects, but it's a fairly significant group. So we can believe that the 40% of actual hits for some level of fantasy significance are actually interesting. Now again, the high A-dot, low slot group, probably more interesting for fantasy, which is why Tez Walker's ceiling is so interesting. It's why some of those Adonai Mitchell shares and Jalen McMillan this year might well pay off for a little bit. But if you're looking for a more consistent relevance to fantasy, those with higher slot rates and lower A-dots, over 60 and below 13, more commonly when drafted have some level of fantasy impact. But again, there are still studs in this group. Justin Jefferson, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jalen Waddle, Drake London, Jordan Addison, AJ Brown, Stephon Diggs all fit that this career description and Cooper Kupp of what they did in college. Now again, they play differently and their roles in the NFL and in college were actually relatively different. Again, this is the problem with buckets, or one of the big problems with buckets. They don't describe particularly well, or at least maybe our understanding of players is more deep than the buckets can describe. But it does put them in a relatively fair group of players while pulling out the less common profiles to give us some idea of their draft expectation on nothing else alone and how well or how often those types of players translate in the NFL to a way that has a fantasy impact. Trying to be as light or have as light touch as possible with those definitions. So going back to Taj Washington, when I look at the fact that he's got a lower slot rate, or below 60% at least, and a lower A-dot, that's not an entirely uninteresting group. Or rather, I already have some immediate context for that. 39% of players drafted in the first three rounds have that kind of bucket. And 51% of the ones drafted have some level of fantasy impact. So he is an interesting bucket player, if you will. But a player can be entirely uninteresting despite being in that group because we don't chase hit rates. We're just trying to use them to understand what's going on in the NFL and give us some level of understanding of what production brackets might bring for us. And again, when we look at these individual buckets of the three that actually have decent samples to consider, there's still a wide range of significance within that bucket, from Alan Lazard to CeeDee Lamb. That's what exists in Taj Washington's bucket. But it does give me some immediate knowledge just by two simple phrases. Low A-dot, low slot. Now, while Zach has asked me to look at this player a little deeper, he didn't tell me much about what he thought of him because I don't want to know. I really do try and understand players more myself before I take in anyone else's. That way I know I have something I'm actually basing my opinion off. And it gives me a baseline of expectation that I find relatively consistently useful. And I'm trying to make it more so increasingly. That's the process. That's the grind. So, outside of where he was playing, what else do I notice? Well, I basically scan across to the numbers you would as well. I have some that I include in my model, which was a good first look. Targeted QB rating is something I started to include in the model from PFF. That's around 113. Career average for Taj Washington's time in college. That's below average. 130 is for really great hits. But it's not bad. It goes vaguely green, if you like. It's not like he's a deficit to his quarterback. He's just not impressing on an average QB targeted rating. His yards per route run around 2.16. Not around, that's it exactly. For his average yards per route run. Not all his yards, but the yards per route run he got every year, average. It's around 2.6. Again, if you're looking for a great hit or just bucketing by great hits, players with top 12 seasons, the average is 3. But 2's fine. It's a very good number to have in college. A player hitting 2 yards per route run in college is having a good season, especially if it's at volume. His average yards per team attempt is around 1.7. I would say anywhere over 1.6 is a pretty decent college player. He was a significant part of his career. And both of those numbers are slightly above the age-adjusted curve, both for his role and how old he was when he was playing in college. All of that gets boiled down into my model, into a meaningless number that should never be used to rank, but is meant to be a shortcut for some of these things for me, which is 12.9. Which is relatively significant in that it's an average score coming into the NFL. Now, that doesn't describe an average player having a good college career, because all of these numbers are getting made up by different things. Taj Washington's score could be 12.9 because he had one great season and 3 terrible seasons, or because he only played half a season, or because he played 5 rather mediocre or bad seasons. There's lots of things that can add up to the same number. What the model's trying to do is take the best off-the-top sheet numbers it can to place them in an order, not in order to group them to similarly successful prospects. So the fact that his name is right next to Jalen Polk or just below Ricky Parcells doesn't mean they all had similar careers. But it does think that if we take the top numbers and boil it all down, he's going to fit in with those guys in terms of his likely chances of scoring significant fantasy points in the NFL, despite they're all very different people and very different profiles. And so when I'm honestly looking through a player, trying to make notes and to rank them, I take all of that as interesting information that I know the background behind all those numbers were made, and so I know a lot of their weaknesses, and I know they're not perfect, and I know to treat them lightly. Again, find as much information as possible, but tread lightly. I don't want to form an opinion of a player whose average and his overall numbers look meh too quickly, because frankly, I don't know how these numbers were made. And I'm not even going to watch, so I don't know the raw cause of how all these numbers were made, as Zach might point out. So, I'm going to dig in on a year-to-year basis. Is this one great year? Is this 3 terrible years and 1 mediocre year? How are these numbers being put together? First stop is always receiving yards per team pass attempt. So he played 4 years in college, it looks like. I knew that already, obviously. But in his first year, he got at age 19, he had 1.7 yards per team pass attempt, or receiving yards per team pass attempt. I happen to know, without looking or age adjusting, that's a really good number to have in your first career. Hitting that is often considered a breakout when paired with volume or significant performance in terms of fantasy points, at least, for the Devy crowd. But the following year, age 20, it drops to 1.2, and then 1.5, and then his senior year, when his physical and the coach's motivation to get him volume, because they know he's leaving the team more likely, is at its peak, he has his best receiving yards per team pass attempt year, and that's at 2.3, which is a significant good mark, and about the average of players at age 21 who go on to have some level of interest in the NFL. But the sum here is adding up to a below average number, as we already talked about. And the cause is really these 2 down years. Now, obviously, you and I already know more context to these numbers, because you never go in blind. I know he transferred in the transfer portal, which sounds like a magical wonderland that belongs in Harry Potter, some sort of mystical swirling thing that you step in and turn up at another team, and I wish I could travel like that. But until that's a thing, I just have to consider he got a new job. I don't know why I went weird with it. But I'm also going to glance along at where was he scoring these receiving yards per team pass attempts. What were his ADOTs? Was he having 2 lower receiving yards per team pass attempts in lower ADOT years? Because those do seem to have effect. Both your slot rate and your ADOT seem to affect what our expectation for his receiving yards per team pass attempts should be. So before I go look at the team and the team switch, I actually just want to consider where he was scoring these numbers. So at age 19, he's running at a 12 ADOT, and age 20, it does drop to 9.7, and then at age 21, the other down year in receiving yards per team pass attempt, it's at 10.9, and then his final year, his best season, it's at 10.7. So his ADOT definitely dropped after that first year, perhaps accounting for some of the lower numbers after a pretty significant first year, but it stayed that low when he went into his final season. So already I know something different about his final season. When he had his best season, he's running an ADOT that, if it caused his lower receiving yards per team pass attempt, he either got infinitely better at for some reason in his fourth career year, or there was some other context. Well, that's what I would suspect. And I'm sorry to walk you through my process like it's sucking eggs, but honestly, I actually think this is why this is a profile I want to do for the Crossroads, because I want it to be illustrative a lot more than I think you should think this about Taj Washington, and Zach gave me the excuse, so here we go. Digging in a little further, I'm going to look both at the teams he was playing at and who he was playing with, and also trying to understand more of the context of those numbers from a year-to-year basis. So in his first year, he's playing for Memphis in the American Conference in 2020. So I know lots of stuff about those hit rates, but it's a below average conference where players don't normally come from. It makes sense that he transferred, right? He's playing with a quarterback I've never heard about before called Brandy White, a running back, a plethora of running backs that don't seem to have had fantasy impact if they have already left the team after 2020. And the wide receiver grouping, apart from Calvin Austin, who got fourth round draft capital, which is interesting, he was the wide receiver one that year, and Taj Washington played the wide receiver two, both with similar route usages. Austin was running 38 routes a game, Taj was running around 37 routes per game. This is his first season in college in the American Conference, but still at age 19. That's interesting. He's getting a 17% target share, though, while Austin was getting 28%. So his targets per out run is notably low. That's not bad. It's just context of where those numbers are coming from. His points per game is relatively decent, 14 points per game. There's also a weird player on the team getting 19.8 points per game, but they only played two games, called DeMonte Coxey. But I just happened to notice that as I observe, you know? This is a year where Calvin Austin scored 2.49 receiving yards per team pass attempt. Taj Washington had a really great production year in terms of the overall averages, 7.9. But I also know Calvin Austin didn't amount to much, and I know this is a lower conference team, and maybe 2.4 isn't significant, which makes 1.7 look fairly pedestrian as well. But fortunately, which isn't always the case, we have other years, and he transfers in that magical transfer portal to USC. His QB that first year, the QB1 in points per game, I watched the games and that wasn't the case, was Kendon Slovis. Don't know him. Seems like a nice guy. His running back one was Keontae Ingram, and he was wide receiver 3 behind Drake London and some fella named Gary Bryant Jr. Not to insult him or his mother, but I don't know who Gary is. But his first year on the team, he is running at 10 points per game. He's running 34 routes per game, which seems immediately after transferring to get again over 30 routes per game, relatively similar to Gary here, and only 4 routes per game less than Drake London, just before he goes to the NFL. That seems like a lot of routes. They brought him over and had high expectations. That's what I take away from it. But what I also notice is that his slot rate is at 6.4. In his time in the American Conference, it wasn't high, but it was at 16. So it's been somewhat of a drop there. And I already know from the top numbers that his ADOT dropped at the same time, from 12.3 down to 9.7. So he's a wide receiver 3 for USC, behind Drake London and some guy called Gary. Getting the similar routes, but a lower slot rate, he's outside the numbers more often, but at a lower ADOT. That's context, and his receiving yards per team pass attempt is poor. But again, he's got 3 players here all running over 30 routes per game. A running back who isn't half bad, because I've profiled him already, Keontae Ingram, was a pretty interesting prospect coming out last year, even if he only got 6th round draft capital. And it's already a better team in Pac-12, and it's his first year there. So it's definitely not a bad year, but some notable things, right? He's dropping in slot rate, dropping in ADOT, he's dropping in the depth chart, even if he's getting a similar number of routes. His targets per route run does come up a smidge, but he's still the guy not earning targets as effectively on his routes as the players in front of him. Moving into the next year, in 2022, Caleb Williams, I know that guy, I know that name at least, becomes his quarterback. Travis Dyer is the running back 1, Austin Jones the running back 2. Jordan Addison, that's a hell of a follow-up to Drake London, is the wide receiver 1 that year, and Taj Washington has elevated himself to 11.8 points per game, far behind Jordan Addison's 18 points per game, but he is a wide receiver too. He's also running less routes, per game at least. Jordan Addison is as well. He's running 28 routes per game, and Taj Washington is running 23 routes per game. So there does seem to be a team shift now that the previous manifestation of the offense is gone, but he's running a lot fewer routes, and there's a bigger significant difference between him and the guy in front of him this year, Jordan Addison. His targets per run remains consistent. He's not earning targets more effectively, but he is running fewer routes, and his target share drops as a result. His ADOT remains low at 10.9, as we already talked about, and his slot rate actually increases significantly to 87.4. So he's moved from a guy reducing his slot rate and his ADOT to a guy who's now kept the lower ADOT, but drastically increased his slot rate. Now he's a wide receiver two behind Jordan Addison. The results are okay. He's running a 1.5 receiving yards per team pass attempt, which is decent but not impressive with this high slot rate. Now, to be fair, as we talked about before, or I'm going to talk about more in depth at another point, reduced slot rates and ADOTs, lower numbers in those categories, do mean you typically expect lower receiving yards per team pass attempts. So maybe we could expect that 1.5 receiving yards per team pass attempt is somewhat similar to his rookie season before he joined this team, 1.7 at age 19. Somewhat comparable in how impressive it is, even though it's not overly impressive, but it's notable. He's not doing badly. He's running behind Jordan Addison, and he's still 1.5 receiving yards per team pass attempt, 23 routes per game, even if it is only for 13% of the targets. He's not doing badly again, and he's suddenly become this high slot player. So that below average slot rate on his overall profile, below 60%, is not true if his real role going into the NFL is going to be about his second year at the USC. Is it going to be his overall profile, or was this just a one-year thing? Well, going into his following season last year in 2023, Caleb Williams is still his quarterback. No surprise there. Marshawn Lloyd, another interesting running back prospect, is running back one. And he has become, with the loss of Jordan Addison, the wide receiver one for the team. Running less routes than Jordan Addison last year, but slightly more than he was doing, with 26 routes per game. Now, already I'm a little concerned, more than I was before when I just saw 2022, because that routes per game doesn't match up to Jordan Addison, even though the offense changed last year, presumably to accommodate partly what he does. And it's not meeting the expectations of the previous year at UC as well. We know there's a 34, 35 routes per game ceiling on what that offense would do with its wide receiver 1, 2, and 3, and he was part of that. But they definitely didn't increase the number of times they were running a route with him, so maybe this is an overall offensive shift. His points per game has come up, so there are touchdowns being scored more regularly at 16.5, and his slot rate remains significantly high, and his ADOT remains significantly low, or lower, at 10.7. His yards per team, receiving yards per team pass attempt, as we mentioned, is 2.3. And so immediately I shift my understanding of what his overall profile was. He's now a high slot player, low ADOT player, and he's fairly effective on it on a relatively well-drafted team. So a high ADOT player and a low slot player, as we talked about, gets relatively little draft capital spent on it, about 20.8% of the draft picks in the first three rounds, but they do have some significance in fantasy relatively highly, or at a relatively high rate in that bucket. Remember, 40% of them had, you know, at least one Jerry Jeudy or Kirk Cousins like, or Kirk Cousins had a top 12 season, Curtis Samuel like season. He's had some fantasy impact, even if it's not been wonderful yet or ever will be, but there is that potential if he gets some level of draft capital with that role in his final 2 years, which he did relatively well at in those final 2 years, at 1.5 and 2.3. Now, there is more to dig into a little bit, but I don't want to drone on too much about it, especially because you've got the numbers and basically the notes as I write them up for my overall ranking profile. But looking at the averages, you can look at exactly what a player running that level of slot route should expect to produce. and the average for a player running over 70% of the slot is around 1.6 instead of over 2, as we mentioned before, for the upside players with top 12 seasons. And he's running 1.5 and 2.3. So he's well within fairly impressive, given his role change in those final 2 years. But there's also some more context, which brings us back to his overall profile and the numbers that go into my model. I think it's underselling exactly what he did in the NFL and how likely he has to have some significance because of what he did those final 2 years. Very capable, if not eye-openingly impressive, certainly was doing relatively well. One behind Jordan Addison, and very capable as a wide receiver one on that offense, even though the offense did feature him less than any other wide receiver one they've had, because he's not Jordan Addison, and he's not Drake London, right? But also the age adjustment, which I said was slightly above average for his entirety of his career in yards per route run and receiving yards per team pass attempt, is probably a little oversold at the same time. He is slightly above average looking at his whole profile, but his whole profile isn't really the story of Taj Washington. So his final 2 years that are most significant are 20 and 21, playing at USC with some expectation of draft capital coming from that team, even with Caleb Williams as his quarterback. So there is more context to dig into it. Ultimately, my conclusion is we have a very capable player able to fill the role in college of a wide receiver one at a higher level than he was ever given credit for earlier in his career. But the other part of this story is he went to USC, was immediately ran out 30 routes per game, and they found him unsuccessful, in my mind, they found him unsuccessful enough at that, even though he was a wide receiver three for a higher college team in his first year playing there, in his second college year ever, they decided he needs to play in a different role. Now, that high slot rate, low A dot rate, is more likely to be fantasy significant to some extent, but like I mentioned before, most commonly the hits from that group are going to be somewhat fantasy relevant. They're not all Justin Jefferson, CeeDee Lamb, or the other upside comparisons in that particular group. Actually, I should probably mention who those comparisons are instead of just assuming off the top of my head. Jalen Waddle, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Justin Jefferson, A.J. Brown are relatively rare birds, and Cooper Kupp in this particular bucket. The more common hits that 40% is coming from is a Curtis Samuel, a Zay Jones, Ricky Seals-Jones, even though he switched to tight end, it gets included in here. Adam Humphries for a brief minute as well. So that has to be evaluated in my overall ranking for him as well. When I come back to my ranks, while I think he is a little underranked, I'm always hesitant to change ranks this far in, because it feels like someone's going to think I'm pulling the rug out from behind him. I can make a case for him being in the fourth tier. He clearly doesn't fit in the fifth tier, where he's doing really well at a role I don't think's particularly worth chasing at fantasy. I think the role he's playing for the majority of interesting years is actually more likely than not to have some level of fantasy utility if successful. But he has a less likely of having immediate or even long-term upside of those fifth tier players who will have those higher ADOT roles, if that makes sense. So he'd more easily fit in the fourth rank, fourth tier, where I think there's more to the profile because of this role shift. Not the team shift so much as the role shift in those final 2 seasons. But ultimately, I don't think it was great enough. 2.3 in his final year, age 21, is good still. But adjusted for age and his new role, I still don't think it's great. I think there's still some interesting stuff in Taj Washington's profile. He's playing in a way in college that has a fantasy utility a lot more often than most when they get draft capital. So if he gets drafted, he's immediately like anyone else who gets drafted, but it can become a lot more interesting. But I don't think he was successful enough in receiving yards per team pass attempt or yards per route run to really elevate him in the fourth tier pre-draft. But if he lands somewhere in the third round, where there is an opportunity to help the team and help other stronger, perhaps, wide receivers succeed in executing a game plan, I definitely think he could come up with a wide receiver 3, or ceiling-wise, a wide receiver 2 volume and fantasy output, at least briefly, in that season, if those circumstances should all intermingle. He doesn't look like someone that's going to force the issue or create that for himself, like Jordan Addison did, and a lot of people saw the potential for in Drake London, but he's definitely capable. He's been somewhat capable at different roles, but a lot more capable of that high slot, lower A dot role that has some level of fantasy utility more often than you'd expect, but a slightly muted ceiling, especially without the gaudy numbers that Jefferson and Amon-Ra put up in those type of roles. So that's too long, didn't read. No, that's way too long. You had to listen. My Taj Washington profile and some information about how I go about thinking about how to put players into tiers. And hopefully, if nothing else, that's illustrative of how I work through a player's profile, at least initially. And how I go about ranking as well. So you have a little bit more information about what my ranks are trying to say outside the notes right next to them as I'm ranking players and putting them in these fictitional tiers. Fictitious tiers. Let me know if it was any interest to you. I don't know, I'm going to be doing a lot of in-depth Here's How I Profile podcast, but Zach asked about this particular player and I wanted to know a little bit more about him. And so I went ahead and dug in a little bit and tried to sum it up without getting too boring for you all here on the podcast. Thanks for checking out the podcast. Hope to see you in the Discord or those Twitter streets sometime. And I will talk to you again next time I find an interesting enough subject or get enough time. Well, hopefully both at the same moment to record one. Really appreciate you all and I'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Yeah. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfold, so. Jake on the table and Nate on the play, so. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical. Picking my nose, don't really know if I like that. Picking their brains, got different lanes, but I like that. Picking these guys, all of these times, all of these nice stats. Picking apart, the film is an art, always a fight. Back and forth, there is no order, they disorder more and more. Because the players ain't no older, they some hoarders or some mortars. Dropping bombs without no borders, they got that eye like Mordor. Peak grinding numbers like molars, I don't know anymore. I am at a crossroads. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfold, so. Jake on the table and Nate on the play, so. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfold, so. Jake on the table and Nate on the play, so. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical.